when I think about trying to define what precision management is, it's basically taking the same management approaches that we have traditionally, but reducing the scale or making the scales finer. And that could be instead of managing a herd of animals with one management practice for a herd, we try to manage individual animals and maybe make management decisions and implement management decisions on individual animals instead of on a herd basis.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. Today, we have Dr. Ryan Reuter from Oklahoma State. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Travis. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So to give you background or give the audience a background, you're a professor at Oklahoma State. You're a range cow nutritionist, dealt a lot of precision livestock management. I know you've got an endowed chair position as well. And we'll get into some of the precision livestock management, but just give the audience overview of, you know, your position and what you do at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, as you said, I'm a professor here in the Department of Animal and Food Sciences. The title, I guess, the descriptor of my position is range beef cattle nutrition, and so I spend about 70% of my effort doing research and about 30% teaching, and I focus in beef cattle nutrition and production management, focusing mostly on the extensive side. I teach a class that includes some feedlot management aspects, but most of my research is all on rangeland, pasture land. And I do some general livestock nutrition, livestock supplementation type work. I've done a little bit of sustainability, greenhouse gas production, greenhouse gas mitigation kind of work. But over the last 10 years, I've gotten really interested in and sort of focused in on understanding how we can use precision technology, sensors, automation, those kind of tools to help us make better decisions in these extensive grazing systems that we manage. So that's the majority of what I work on at the moment and what is it kind of captures my attention.
So on the precision side, what does that mean when you talk about precision management and from academia standpoint and also from a stakeholder rancher standpoint, what does precision mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when I think about trying to define what precision management is, it's basically taking the same management approaches that we have traditionally, but reducing the scale or making the scales finer. And that could be instead of managing a herd of animals with one management practice for a herd, we try to manage individual animals and maybe make management decisions and implement management decisions on individual animals instead of on a herd basis. Or it may be instead of making a supplementation decision for the next 3 months for this entire feeding period that we're thinking about for this cow, we may make management decisions and change supplementation programs in a week's time, or maybe we change supplementation management every day. So it's about making the scale of our management decisions and the control that we have that we impose over these systems, making that scale finer. And for a lot of people, that's going to mean that we have to have electronics, sensors, technology, those kind of things involved to do that. And for the most part, we do need those tools to enable that scale of management.
Why would producers want or need that level of precision? Why would they be interested in that?
From a producer standpoint, some of the benefits, potential benefits of precision management I mean, there are, I think, several potential benefits. One is that I think there are opportunities where we can just wring more efficiency out of these systems. All of our management decisions, a lot of our management decisions and supplementation decisions are focused on improving the efficiency with which we produce beef cattle. And I think as we have more ability to control those management decisions, we can get to finer and finer scales of efficiency and capture even a little bit more efficiency with every scale. And so I think one of the big pushes for precision agriculture, precision technology, is to keep chasing the efficiency that's out there that we can't quite capture yet. So that's probably one big one. And we hope that in a lot of cases, that's where the potential profit comes from. We can get increased production by capturing that efficiency and potentially reducing input costs. But then I think there are also several other potential benefits of this kind of management technology. I think sometimes it can be time-saving technology. It can be labor-saving. Implementing management decisions, implementing supplementation recommendations, it can make that easier. It can make it safer. It can make it where people that aren't in the physical prime of their life can still implement those decisions and still do management. And so I think those are all potential benefits of some of this technology. We've worked on equipment that can meter supplementation out to individual cows every day. And if you think about that, again, there's probably good potential efficiency gains there, but also you don't have somebody that's driving out to the pasture every day, that's opening five gates every day, that's dragging 50-pound sacks of feed off the back of a feed truck and cows bumping around them, being aggressive, trying to get to put that in the feeder. And so in some ways it's just safer, it's easier. And that can have benefit to a lot of people that are still trying to operate in this business.
Yeah. I think of it as resource efficiencies, you know, it just increases your efficiencies of all your resources. But going back to some work that David Lauman, your colleague, has done of, you know, we haven't really changed weaning weight in the United States. We haven't changed reproduction in the United States in 20, 30 years. And so our outputs are not changing, but our cost of productions are increasing. And so that's a massive challenge for producers. And that's where I see this big fit of technology and precision is, how can we make those changes when, you know, 65% of my cow cost is due to nutrition? And you're talking about some of these precision feeders. And, you know, if you're feeding, you know, 1 pound per day to say animals or whatever it is, you've got cows eating 4 pounds, or you get cows not eating.
Absolutely.
And so that's a massive inefficiency in our system. And that's where we get a lot of differences in production responses that, you know, overweight cows or cows that underperformed, et cetera.
Absolutely. There's, you know, we see that in almost every experiment that we do where we're measuring individual animal intake. We'll have 10% of animals that don't consume supplement. And, you know, it's hard to know if that is always the case in a traditional group fed supplement. I mean, when we go out and feed cows in a pasture, you see them all line up at the bunk and I see them all what appears to be eating. So, you know, I don't think that in a traditional system, maybe the refusals are quite as big as we see in some of these precision technology systems because the way that we implement supplements different, but we see 10% of animals that refuse to eat supplement in these experiments. And that's not always directly tied to their production. We see those cows still produce calves, still wean calves, still wean good calves. They're in the average of the mix. So it raises the question of how is that cow doing that? What's her genetics that led her do that? And those are interesting questions to keep chasing for us in this business. And again, as you said, you know, we'll have cows that eat three or four cows worth of supplement if we would let them. And we know that they don't need, we don't get that much extra production out of those cows. They don't need that much supplement. So they're just like people. So it's valuable to be able to measure that and then hopefully someday control that.
Well, it provides that ability, unlike, you know, the dairy industry that gets their hands on cows every day. We had limited ability to make decisions based on individual cows. And so this allows for a little bit more of that ability to make some of those better management decisions or more precise decision-making on per cow basis.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, so what devices are out there for producers? What are you using? What do you recommend to producers to look at?
I don't know that I have a strong recommendation for producers right now to go look at devices, but I have a lot of producers that are interested in this technology. And so we talk about the pros and cons of a lot of different kinds of technology. Some of the devices out there right now are certainly kind of active RFID ear tags are one. And those kind of tags basically let a producer know when an animal enters a certain geographic location, passes by a tag reader. So those that can have a lot of value. There are ear tags out there right now that contain accelerometers, and those devices are light, they're cheap, they don't take much battery power, and so that works really well in an ear tag form factor. And an accelerometer lets a producer get information about the behavior of the animals. And so, you know, and those tags are available commercially and are not super cost prohibitive. So those are viable options right now. There are tags out there that can measure heart rate of animals. When I have tested those so far, I don't see a good enough correlation with the gold standard measures of heart rate to feel real confident about that. But that technology is progressing. It's going to get better. There are tags that measure internal body temperature at the tympanic membrane in the ear of animals. And I think those tags have been out for a while for use in confinement animals. And that's got potential management ability. So those are kind of a lot of the types of devices that are available today in an ear tag form factor. You know, if you get away from an ear tag form factor, there are some other things out there. There are rumen boluses that measure temperature and pH and motility in the rumen. Those probably have more application right now in dairies than they do in beef cattle, but they're out there. There are sensors that measure the rumination time of animals. They can do that acoustically, or they can do that with an accelerometer. So there's devices. We have devices right now, and these are almost kind of research grade devices. They're much more expensive, the ones that I'm fixing to talk about. But there are devices that can measure methane emissions of individual animals on pasture. That device is basically a trailer that the animal visits, like a feeding station. So it's not on the animal, but you put it in the pasture and animals come to it. And it is fairly expensive. There are devices that will meter supplement out to individual animals. And again, that would be a trailer kind of system that you'd put in the pasture and an animal would come to it. So those are out there. And then probably the big one that I've spent the most time recently working on is virtual fence. And that's a collar. All the systems right now, virtual fence systems are collars, and you put a collar on the animal and it works very much like a pet containment system. It's all GPS based, and you can put the collar on the animal, program the collar of where you want the animal to stay in the pasture, and the system wirelessly communicates back and forth from your computer to the collar, and the system works to keep the animals where you want them on the landscape. And we've been doing research with a couple of virtual fence collar systems now for 4 or 5 years. And that's a really popular precision animal technology device that's out there. So that kind of gives you a little bit of an overview of what's out there. And, you know, there are new devices coming on the market all the time. Companies are actively updating these devices, trying to make them more reliable, have more features to them, make them have more value to the end user. And I think, you know, we're kind of in the early stage of this business right now, and 15 years from now, I think these kinds of sensors will be nearly ubiquitous in a lot of our commercial management systems.
We're definitely at a big technology boom area. That it's crazy how fast things are moving. So I do like your point of saying essentially not recommending anything, right? Because it's going to change. The market's going to change in the next 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and so many of these technologies have a high cost of investment right now. And so you're risking a lot to invest upfront that is something that may not be very good in the next 2 or 3 years, because these companies are moving very rapidly, upgrading, making things better, et cetera. And so it's definitely a very interesting time from that standpoint.
Absolutely. You know, I'll use virtual fence as an example, because that kind of is what's on the top of my head. But, you know, there are virtual fence systems out there that are commercially available right now in the U.S. And there are situations that I've worked with ranchers on where virtual fence right now is the best management decision for them. It makes the most money. It's the cheapest,
yep,
most cost-effective way to accomplish the goals that they have for managing their operations. And we've seen those scenarios right now today.
Mm-hmm.
For the most producers, it's close to being a wash whether,
yeah,
virtual fence technology or traditional fencing is going to be the most cost-effective way to do what they want to do. And then we have several producers that virtual fence would be substantially more expensive than traditional fencing right now to accomplish their goals. So it really depends on the person and what their goal is and what they're interested in. We have people that, you know, that virtual fence is a little bit more expensive than traditional fence when we do the analysis, but they like it and they want to do it anyway. They're into it. So they're, you know, that's what they want to do. So that's fine. But, you know, I think the cost of these things is, as with all technology, it will go down over time and it will get more reliable and better over time, just like every piece of technology does. And there are situations right now where virtual fence and some of these other technologies that, hey, that's the thing you should do right now, but it's not for everybody today.
You know, it's the new shiny thing that's not a silver bullet, but it comes down to what is your biggest need for your operation? And, you know, some people jump on early because it's a new shiny thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't fit their biggest needs.
Yeah.
And you're right. There's a lot of producers that have used it and used it well, and it's really worked for them. There's a lot of producers that used it. It didn't work well because it didn't fit their needs.
Absolutely.
You touched on some labor issues, and so how do you see from a, you know, ranch aspect, does this replace cowboys or labor by, you know, adopting technology?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I get that question a lot. We get some, you know, some people are kind of the early adopters and love the technology and are really excited about it, want to implement it. And then we get people on the other end of the spectrum who are kind of anti-technology and, you know, and don't want this to replace a cowboy on a horse, you know, going and checking cows. And so I understand both sides of that. And, you know, I think for a lot of producers, these technologies are certainly not going to eliminate the need for an on-site manager, a person that's looking at the animals and using these sensors that we have here that we've used for forever to manage our animals. We still need that person, and we're going to need that person. We're going to need somebody there that can make those decisions. So I don't think it replaces cowboys. I do think a lot of these technologies have real potential to augment your eyes and let you potentially let a cowboy spend their time more wisely and look at and manage the animals that really need management and maybe not get distracted with other things that the sensors can tell us, hey, everything's going okay over here on this 80%, but this 20%, this is where we really need to spend our time. And we need to go here and investigate and understand what's going on this 20%. So, you know, I think a scenario like that is really valuable, where it can augment a manager. And then I think some of these technologies, can do things that just people physically can't do. I mean, people physically can't look at animals 24/7. And so some of these sensors have the ability to do that, where they're monitoring the activity, the health status of these animals 24/7. Maybe the sensors will tell us, hey, this cow's laying down and calving in the bottom of this, ravine at 3 o'clock in the morning and everything's going fine. And, you know, we don't need to get up and check on her, or everything's not fine. And we need to go right here, right now and check on this cow and implement some management. So, you know, I think it's certainly an augmentation to a lot of the traditional tasks that cowboys and ranch managers would use.
Yeah. We work in some big extensive environments that, you know, we don't have time to check cows every day, maybe even once a week. And so think about it as you now have eyes on cows 24/7 that helps make those decisions that you didn't have before. So with all that, what have you found to be some of the technical challenges and some of the successes using some of these technologies?
Well, there's a lot of potential challenges that we've found a lot of challenges with trying to implement these things. There's challenges in the hardware. Certainly a range cow, beef cow out on a pasture is a pretty challenging environment for a lot of the engineers. Sometimes don't understand how challenging of an environment that can be.
Yep.
And making these devices durable and reliable and long lasting in these to stand up to these kind of environments is a challenge. And certainly it compounds that challenge when you're trying to make the devices cheap. And when you're, especially if you're trying to put them in the form factor of an ear tag, they have to be light.
Yep.
And so trying to get all those things to come together is a super challenge on the engineering side of the device. The electronics part of it, and from what I've seen, the radio communication, the sensors to the actual sensor itself to record the data, the radio to transmit the data, all that stuff seems to kind of work pretty well. I don't see a lot of engineering challenges there. It's more of for the hardware. It's more on the packaging is the real challenge. And then on the user side, the software side, it's a real challenge to make these things usable, in a ranch environment, and maybe for people that aren't used to using a lot of technology, that don't have a lot of background in using sensors, using automation, working with those systems, it's a real challenge to make these things, make them usable and yes. And user friendly, where a producer wants to use them and sees the value in it. So, you know, I think those are a lot of the big challenges that we've seen in these systems. I mean, one thing, just having the device with an identification on the device, so you can match the device, which device you put on which cow, and make that identification last for 3 years on a cow. Like, that's hard. that's not an easy challenge to solve.
It's a great, you know, as technology increases, you think about a lot of these kids that want to come back to the ranch or have the ag background. Yeah. There's a big space for them in the technology world right now.
Yeah.
Of understanding the production side, but having a desire to be in technology.
Absolutely. And be comfortable with that technology and yes. not not afraid of it, not afraid of breaking something or setting, having the wrong set, you know, the settings and doing something bad to it, and knowing how to troubleshoot it, kind of intuitively knowing how to reset things and how to get it back working again. Those are, you know, those are going to be real valuable skills to have on a ranch in the future that we kind of haven't needed in the past so much. And so I think there really is a real opportunity for young people that are interested in that and have that skill and have that comfort level to come to ranches and really bring a lot of value.
Yes, I agree. To wrap us up, what kind of successes are you seeing with technology from a, you know, CalCat standpoint or extensive environment standpoint?
Yeah, we've spent most of our time recently researching virtual fence, and we've seen some challenges, but we've sure seen some successes with virtual fence management. You know, we can keep animals out of sensitive areas in pastures that we don't want them to be in, specifically like riparian areas, or we don't have this problem much here, but it would be very easy to keep them out of areas that have poisonous plants, for instance. Yeah. We've seen people have success with that. So that works really well. You know, virtual fence is not, you kind of have to change the way you think about it just a little bit. It's not black and white like a traditional barbed wire fence, like cattle are either in or out. Okay. With virtual fence, we work on percentages trying to think about it as shades of gray or percentages. We can keep animals out of riparian areas like 98% of the time, you know. So, which is for that management goal is a success. I mean, that really improves the ecosystem function in that riparian area. If we have a 98%, we don't have to get to 100% that we have a success there. So, you know, we've seen real successes like that. We're able to individually supplement cows every day and change the amount of supplement that individual cows can get every day, and we can be pretty successful at doing that. Maybe not quite as accurately as I would hope that we could be from a research standpoint, but from a commercial standpoint, we can kind of do that. I don't know if it's cost effective yet, but we can implement it. So, you know, I think we're seeing those kind of successes out there. And I think as we continue to develop these systems, we'll keep building on and having more success with different management practices that we want to implement.
Ryan, to wrap us up, anything you want to touch on that we didn't talk on?
You know, I think we hit a lot of good points, but you know, I would say again, if a producer's thinking about implementing these technologies, I do think you kind of need to be willing to change the way that you think about managing your animals. Especially with virtual fence, you know, the traditional way of fencing animals was land-based. And so you'd have to think about, you know, where on the landscape do you want to put the fence and what does it cost and what are the logistics of installing and maintaining a fence on this landscape. In virtual fence, it's really more animal based. And so you have to think, what does it cost? How many animals do I have? What kind of animals? What's it cost to get a collar on that animal, to maintain the collar on the animals? Now we have to put the animals in the chute to maintain our fence.
Right.
We can't just go ride the fence around the pasture and check it. If we got to change batteries or whatever, we got to put the animals in the chute. So it's really a different mindset of how you manage containment. And that's one example. And a lot of these technologies, you kind of have to think through how you think about managing these animals.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. And sometimes we try something, it fails, and it wasn't the technology's fault. It was us. And we throw it away and say, this doesn't work. And so sometimes it's our mindset going in of utilizing that technology and knowing how to utilize it, whether or not it works for our operations.
True. That's a good point.
Well, Ryan, thanks for the time. Really great stuff on precision management. It's a definitely a exploding area that I think is going to be tremendous for the beef industry in the next, you know, several years of how do we embrace and utilize technologies.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Travis. It was really fun to visit with you.
It's time for our famous three.
Everyone knows vitamin D affects bone formation, immunity, and growth. What everyone doesn't know is research shows cattle don't get enough vitamin D. High D from DSM Firmenich optimizes health and growth with a more bioavailable form of vitamin D. And data shows high D fed heifers weighed over 8 pounds more at weaning. Don't let your cattle be vitamin deficient. Meet the growing needs of your herd year-round with high D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
Ryan, we've got three optional questions here, and the first one is what is your go-to highly recommended beef resource, book, website?
Yeah.
What do you recommend people utilizing?
Well, there's several. One that I really think about as a textbook, I guess, that I rely on for some of the classes I teach and some of the work that I do is a book called Southern Forages. And it comes out of Auburn and kind of in the southeast there, but it's applicable to a lot of Oklahoma. It's probably not as applicable to Oregon, but it's applicable to the southern U.S. Southern Forages. Don Ball writes that book, and it's really good, concise management. It's got theory and it's got management applications for managing forages and especially in grazing systems. And that information isn't captured in other resources very well that I see. So that's a great one.
Oh, it's a great resource. I have that book somewhere packed away.
Yeah. There's a new version out, new edition.
So what is a non-ag book that you highly recommend someone reading?
A non-ag book. One that came to mind, is a book by it's just a fun book to read. I like reading, and I've read it a couple of times just because it's fun. A book by Richard Feynman, who was a physicist in the 50s and 60s and or I guess 40s 50s back in there. It's a book called The Pleasure of Finding Things Out, and it's just a collection of short stories that Dr. Feynman wrote about how he discovered some things related to physics or math or the natural world and kind of just a peek inside of how his brain worked. And it's really, to me, it's just a fun book to sit down and read.
I have to look that one up. So to wrap us up, what is, in your opinion, what sets apart a successful beef professional from someone that's not?
I think when you think about a professional, to me, you know, that implies that a person's got a lot of knowledge, a lot of factual technical knowledge about their subject. They have a lot of experience, practical experience, just time spent in the industry, understand the way the industry and the business works. And then integrity and a person that you can trust and that is is kind of an impartial source of information and a person that you can trust. So, you know, if I was gonna try to answer that question for me, I think I would try to find people that were the combination of those three things that to me exemplify what a professional is. And I've certainly had the pleasure of being around a lot of those type of people in my career. Hope that I can be that too.
No, it's a great response and it's a great attribute to try to achieve and be one. Well, again, Ryan, thanks for the time. Great conversation, doing some really cool stuff. Really have enjoyed seeing the research that y'all are doing at Oklahoma State and with virtual fence and other precision technologies.
You bet. It was great to be with you and visit with you and your listeners, and hope we can do it again someday.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent with APA Time Zone Hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.